Welcome back to the Greater Greener podcast, where we dive into the environmental challenges and solutions shaping our future. Today, we are speaking with Representative Bryce Berry of Georgia's 56th District about environmental issues, his political background, and future legislative plans.
I am State Representative Bryce Berry from House District 56, which covers downtown, midtown, and southwest Atlanta. The neighborhoods specifically are Hunter Hills neighborhood, Westview, Vine City, up to Liberty Atlantic Station, and Liberty Buckhead as well.
Awesome. I like to start these off with something fun. So you're one of the younger legislators in the House.
Yep.
And you always are very stylish. You always have on a pair of sneakers. So what is your favorite pair of sneakers, or like what is favorite top?
It really depends on the day. I am very adverse to wearing dress shoes with my suits. I keep them in my office and I just put them on when I'm going to the floor, put them right back off I get off the floor. So it changes by the day. I don't have a favorite. I just can say I haven't worn them all yet.
Mm.
I haven't worn them all. So I don't favorite that I've worn, I don't know.
What's your most notable shoe? Like it's like, oh, this was a drop and I'm one of the people that got it.
I guess my Off-White Dunks. Those,
yeah,
I guess those,
that'll do it. Those, I have the Off-White Fours.
Off-White Dunks, yeah, I guess those. I mean, a lot of people have these, but Bapes.
I just
got the kind of Bape thing, and I haven't worn them to the Capitol yet. But I guess my proudest purchase was the Off-White Dunks, but I didn't think it was that rare. But that was my proudest purchase, because I thought I was going to be like, not going to get a pair.
Yeah. Off-whites are always, I think those are always, everybody has like an off-white story.
Yeah.
So like my brother brought me my first pair of off-whites. So
yeah,
that'll do it.
And I have like two or three pairs. And I was like, maybe it wasn't that rare at all. But I really was like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get them. Gotta be on at midnight.
Yeah, that's like my favorite thing to see on my sneakers app is the got them. And I have to post it every time because it's just like, I want to show you that I got these.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I have to show you. They're
like,
these.
It's like concert tickets. You got to post your concert tickets.
You know, like it's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
They're these fours. Fours are my favorite pair of Jordans.
Like
fours and
too.
Ones. They're like this. This like mint or sage green. They're dropping. It's like the.
Those are, yeah. So
those
I saw
are dropping
those
on like the
hard,
8th or the 9th.
Hard.
I must.
Yeah. Those.
I must. I'm trying to cut back this year, but I'm sorry.
I like my mochas too.
Yeah.
I like my mochas.
Yeah.
Those are fire. And those are another ones I was like, I'm not getting them. And I got
you gotta get
and,
got
well, I didn't get them that night. It ended up being like a Christmas gift later on, but I was like, I'm not getting them, and I didn't get them, but eventually got them. I like my mochas.
So can you share a bit about your journey into politics and what inspired you to run for office and represent Georgia's 56th district?
Yeah, so I got started in politics when I was 13 years old. Started organizing after the killing Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, which I'm from Ferguson, and that really galvanized our community, of course, as it galvanized the entire country. And so it started in like protest organizing, and then realizing that the change we wanted to see came from putting good people in office. Because the reason that Michael Brown's killer is not in jail right now is because there was a corrupt prosecutor in St. Louis County. And so I started working for Wesley Bell, who was then running for St. Louis County prosecutor in his insurgent campaign. Worked for Senator McCaskill. Then I started just working for good people. Senator McCaskill, Wesley Bell. Then I came to Georgia when I went to Morehouse. I worked for President Biden and Senator Ossoff in the runoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So just kept working campaigns because I kept wanting to get good people in office. But never saw myself running for office myself. I just like working campaigns.
Organizing,
I just like organizing, like working campaigns. I'm crazy. And became a teacher. Still had that heart of service. Still wanted to like be in that kind of realm.
Mm-hmm.
But it was my students that really galvanized me. I have students who are homeless, students who have unfortunately been a victim of gun violence, students whose parents work 2-3 jobs to make ends meet. And, you know, I have 7th graders, so they're asking these questions like, why isn't healthcare free?
Yeah.
Why is rent so high? And those are questions that even you as an adult can't answer.
Right.
And so if we are giving our kids a society where they have to question about, they ask those why questions and not ask the, that's kind of why questions, it for me is just not conducive. For me, it just wasn't a society that I'm willing to leave my students. The biggest story I've always shared is, like, I had a student whose dad was shot in front of him.
Wow.
And, came to school. He was like, "Oh, it's fine." I was like, "No, we have, it's not.
Yeah, it's not okay.
We should not have students that believe that their parents getting shot is okay
thing.
Yeah,
violence.
We shouldn't have students that believe that their rent being too high is an okay thing. We shouldn't have students that believe that not having a hospital in their community is a normal thing, because it's not. And we've normalized a society because this is what we've been conditioned to make normal.
Right.
But it's, we know that we deserve a lot better. And that's why I ran, because I just had the idea that, the crazy idea that we just deserve better as a people and deserve better as a state.
Yeah, I love that. What are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities you've encountered while serving in the state legislature? What legislative day is it today?
It is day 25.
Day 25.
Well, we just finished day 25, so actually day 26.
Day 6, yeah.
And biggest challenge, I guess, is just my age. No, I'm 23 years old. And I obviously am much younger than my counterparts and my colleagues in the State House. And so you still get the questions about, I go off the side door of the Capitol where it's only for legislators, only for legislators, those that have a badge, and they're like, "Oh, are you supposed to be here?"
Yeah, bro.
I was like,
"Look at the pen,
I
bro."
I have the pen. Or even today, it was funny, today was Young Democrats of Georgia Day at the State Capitol, and well-meaning legislators, they were like, "We thought you were one of the Young Democrats." Well, I am one of the Young Democrats, I'm here in my official capacity.
Right.
And of course, there are the jokes that people make, "You're the baby of the house," and "I'm baby of the house." That's why I'm so, please run for office. Make me so I'm not the youngest person anymore, because I do not want to be the youngest person. the challenge will always be just being 23 and not that I have to show myself approved, because hell, I'm here now. I'm here.
You got the votes.
I'm here. I've been dutifully sworn in. But it's just, folks that will just make the jokes in the comments. And I guess that, I don't know where that comes from, but it's just the jokes and comments about "You're 23, just a baby." But I do have a serious understanding of policy. I do understand what I'm doing, and I know.
And have an organizing background.
I have an organizing background,
which is even more so to say that you know what you're talking about.
I know what I'm talking
organizers
about.
Are the backbone of every single political movement and campaign.
Exactly.
So being an organizer, really, in any sense of the form, makes you the most qualified to be in the room.
No one would be in office without an organizer.
Nobody
would be in office.
Nobody.
So, just reassuring, not reassuring, because I'm here. I'm not here to reassure. I'm not here to placate. Yeah. But having to go the extra mile, even to give folks and show folks I am serious too. One of your counterparts as well.
Yeah, what I'm talking about matters, and just because I'm young,
it doesn't mean
I shouldn't be respected in the space, or I'm not bringing something to the table.
Exactly.
Age doesn't always mean that you have more to give. It doesn't mean you know everything.
Right.
Sometimes it means that you have more to learn too, because you're also older. So
exactly.
And we have another generation coming in. Bryce, we are all both Gen Z.
Yes, we are.
So being in that generation, a generation of change makers, and it's incredible for you to be 23 years old and hold public office.
Yes.
That is nothing to sneeze at. That is incredible.
Thank you.
And you look back 10 years from now at 33 and be like, "Yeah, I was." However long you want to, do the trajectory of being in the house and wherever you go on from this, it's just like, I was elected to office at 23 years old. That's not something that so many people can say. So that's incredible.
Exactly.
We're incredibly proud of you. You're representing Gen Z.
Thank you.
Very, very well.
Thank you. Thank you.
So how has your district shaped your priorities as a lawmaker? And are there any specific issues that your constituents are particularly passionate about? In the 56.
The three big issues we talk about often are education, housing, and public safety.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to what a community needs to be whole.
Right.
And there's a lot of, there's the economic development part, there's the healthcare part, but the three main things I always hear is public safety, housing, and education. That's what we want to do to feel whole. We want our kids to go to a school that is the best funded school in the nation. We want to come home to a house that is not overpriced, and we want to feel safe in our communities, and that's what people want. And in fact, I just had my first town hall tonight, and these issues were now reiterated. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny, you know, we had a conversation, I'm going to share the story. We had a conversation about HB 111, which is the governor's tax cut bill. Mm-hmm. And I told my constituents, I was like, I'm going to be very honest with y'all. I'm not voting for this bill. Because if you make less than $75,000 in the state with this bill, you get about a $20 tax cut. But if you make more than $500,000 in the state, you get like a $7,500, a little bit more dollar tax cut. Wow. And I was like, so I just can't justify voting for the bill. And that's a very unpopular position for a lot of representatives and politicians mm-hmm. to take. Like, I'm voting against a tax cut bill.
Right.
Majority of people would be like, we want tax cuts.
Yeah.
But everyone in that room was like, good, thank you. And I was actually very shocked. I expected them to say something different. But what it showed me is that Georgians are just looking for somebody to fight for them and stand up for them.
Yeah.
They understand these issues. They understand, when we talked about plainly, they understand, like, we can't keep giving giveaways to corporations and to insurance companies and expect that the people will be uplifted. We can't keep mm-hmm. doing the same things and not, without structural changes, expecting this different results.
Right.
That's lunacy. Mm-hmm. And they want somebody that sees them and fights for them. My constituents were like, we finally have an ally in the State House. You know, but Councilman Myron Amos was there. He's like, we finally have a partner in the State House.
Right.
That's what folks want. Folks just want somebody that's going to fight for them. They want somebody that's going to stand up for their issues. And so I've tried every day to address those issues within education, housing, and public safety, but look deeper as well about what the whole community needs mm-hmm. to be whole.
So Georgia has made strides in renewable energy, mm-hmm. but there's still a long way to go. What policies or legislation are you currently championing to help Georgia transition to 100% clean renewable energy?
So I'm really looking at data centers. Uh-huh. That's a really, really interesting thing to me. I'm studying a lot about that right now, and how they consume so much energy and mm-hmm. how they're raising people's energy rates and uh-huh. raising people's Georgia. And so I'm very interested in supportive of policies that are reining these things in or even getting rid of them, period.
Right.
Because they are, A, not using clean renewable energy, mm-hmm. B, raising rates, C, creating exasperating issue of food insecurity, mm-hmm. and are already land insecurity as well, where we don't have enough space to even put these places.
Right.
And so that's one thing that I'm looking at.
Which would be SB 34, which is the data centers bill by Chuck Huffsetler, which is hopefully going to cross over. It's currently in rules right now.
Okay.
So we hope that it will cross over to you guys and you'll get it on that side to be able to support a transparency bill for data centers.
Yes, that's a big thing to me. You know, we don't, and it's very rare that we see renewable energy initiatives come through the State House. Mm-hmm. It's often a mundane kind of talk. It oftentimes just ends up in a mundane committee that's not going to bring it up for a hearing. But I'm happy to see that there's now this push. One of the first things we did was talk about in the budget, the amended budget that we had to pass, talk about things like water infrastructure as well. Mm-hmm. I have two neighbors in my district, Mosley Park and Westview, that have irregular flooding from the Proctor Creek. Mm-hmm. And so what we were able to secure as a caucus investments into low interest loans for neighborhood associations and homeowner associations. We were able to take these interest loans to be able to do things like control the waterways and put barriers along the roads so they don't have flooding as much as they do. So when they get 0.1 inches of rain, it's not flooding. So you see, we're starting to see more of a drive and push towards more sustainable sources and more renewable sources. Mm-hmm. Another issue is the issue of sound barriers along our highways.
Right.
That is only an issue in predominantly Black neighborhoods because places like Buckhead, they already have the sound barriers. They've got it. But Southwest Atlanta, my district, we don't have the sound barrier along the I-20 corridor right now. And they're asking for that. They're begging for that. And so
right.
That's another thing we'll be pushing. But you know, I'm loving that we're seeing a push towards these more sustainable, renewable sources, data centers, water, all this stuff. I'm loving that we're seeing that push.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hopeful that, you know, we can continue to work together because that Huddleston's bill is a bipartisan bill.
Mm-hmm.
The water structure thing was bipartisan. I'm hopeful that we continue to do things, continue to work with our Republican friends on the Republican side, and I'm hoping they can find an awakening. Because this is a situation about, and I think this is a benefit that, you know, benefit that Gabe Sanchez and I have as being Gen Z, to be able to talk to this and say, you know, it's our generation to be dealing with these effects, and we need to take the action now.
Right, because we are making decisions for the people that are coming behind us. Gen Alpha, who will be able to run for office very soon there, so we need to make sure that they are also advocated
that
for
makes me feel old.
Well.
That makes me feel old.
They are coming up and they're calling us old. They're saying that they're calling us the new boomers. That's what the Gen Alpha thinks about.
They are. And just tell them, I'm going home tonight. I'm going to open up a bottle of wine. I'm going to make me some dinner and call it a night. And that doesn't make me old. It makes me at peace.
Amen.
It makes me at peace.
So, the 100% campaign, which is something that GCV is doing. A lot of 100% campaigns exist here in Georgia, but GCV has an initiative to advocate for municipalities to adopt clean energy resolutions by 2050. Do you see a path for Georgia to achieve this goal, and what steps need to happen at the state level to support local efforts?
I do see a path for Georgia to achieve this goal by 2050. What it's going to take, though, is collective organizing and a collective movement that's going to change the leadership.
Right.
It can happen.
Yeah.
Not with the current leadership that we have in the state of Georgia. Mm. We need a new governor who talks to the Natural Resources Department. Mm-hmm. We need a new Senate and House majority that will take these issues seriously and put chairmen of the committees who are actually know what they're talking about, qualify, and about clean energy and renewable sources. And so it can happen. I'm positive it can happen. What we need is collective organizing effort, get more good people in office and seats that, you know, my caucus, Democrat caucus, can take back. Right. HD53, which is HD53, and there's some seats in Gwinnett that we can take back as a caucus this cycle. Be effective in organizing, talking to folks about this. Because ultimately, when you get good people in there that cares about the issues, we can push forward to get that. And so, you know, it's not a question of if, but when.
Right. Absolutely. So climate change disproportionately affects marginalized communities. What policies do you support to address environmental justice and ensure equitable access to clean energy and resources?
Yeah, so, you know, I look a lot at my stuff from the standpoint of what my students need to live better.
Yeah.
And so I am looking heavily into the transportation issues of our schools and our school buses and how our kids are getting to school. And keeping it local, in my own district, Hunter Hills has a railroad that literally cuts it in half, right? Mm. And so morning time, school buses try to get there.
Right.
And, you know, what they've been, this is actually really deep and really nerdy. So schools try to get through the railroad, right? But let's say a morning, the train's crossing the road, railroad. Right. So the school bus just has to sit. The school bus just sits for however long it takes for that road, that train to get done crossing. Nerdy part is that, you know, the fumes of the school bus are, I forgot how many times higher it is than the fumes of a car.
Because it's such a big, it's a bigger engine, it's a bigger vehicle.
Yeah. So that school bus is just sitting there and on, the engine's running, and the fumes are getting all throughout the neighborhood. And so looking at the transition, not from, because schools need more school buses, but also we need more green school buses as well to ensure that we don't get those fumes in the neighborhood. But again, I look at everything from a hyper-local standpoint and what do my students need. So we talk about, to your question, I just see that's the first thing in my mind, like transportation issues with our schools. Not only do we need more school buses, we need green school buses so that, you know, when we do have issues like buses sitting at the railroad in the morning, they're not sitting there 15 minutes just putting up fumes in the sky.
Right, emissions, right.
They're not just, it's not a free-for-all for emissions.
Right, absolutely. So Georgia has abundant natural resources from its coastlines to its forests. How do you balance economic development with conservation efforts to protect the state's environment? And you're in a very, you know, place where things go up and down in terms of like development and all that stuff. So how are you, protecting the natural resources, and conserving those?
Yeah. And this is actually a conversation that we brought up in the economic development committee that I'm on. I'm a strong believer in community benefit agreements and giving those community benefit agreements teeth. I think what I would like to see is that the state pass some sort of policy saying that, you know, any development effort needs to have a community benefit agreement, especially along coastal lines. So that's just one thing that I think about, like, initially. Mandating CBAs for development agreements.
What's a CBA for the people
who don't community know? Community benefit agreement. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
Community benefit
okay.
agreements.
I got it.
And ensuring that we are protecting our coastal line, protecting mm-hmm. our natural resources, protecting the place like Okefenokee and our South Georgia. You know, one of my favorite places is Tybee Island in mm-hmm. Georgia.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place. And I think that that could be a good model for how we do economic development. And also balance our natural resources. Tybee Island is actually one of the most susceptible to hurricanes right now mm-hmm. because economic development has not been equitable, and folks are leaving the island. And travel is going down. It's actually hurting
right.
our economy.
Right.
And so, you know, I can't do it alone by myself. You know, we want more people to go back down to Tybee Island. But with mandated community benefit agreements, when we have folks come in and their community is involved with the process, mm-hmm. community overwhelming. Of course, Tybee Island, they want to protect their shores.
Right.
Savannah, Brunswick, they want to protect their shores. But when you work with community leaders, members, homeowners to say, this is what we want to do, this is our plan, they will provide input and say, well, this plan is good, but we want to have X amount of investment in this, or X amount of investment in this. We want you to build a barrier along this coast. You know, those right. are things that CBAs are bringing about.
Absolutely. So speaking about just getting there, having a community benefit agreement, mm-hmm. What role do you think state governments should play in holding corporations accountable for pollution and environmental degradation?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, play a huge, huge role. And I think it has to be a collective effort from the city, county, local effort to mm-hmm. all the way to state. But right now in the state of Georgia, we keep giving corporations tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. And the downside is that, you know, I think there's some folks that I like to be optimistic and say there are folks that don't agree with corporate tax cuts like we are doing in such a drastic way. But what's happening is the corporate tax and the personal income tax is linked. Mm-hmm. So corporations are kind of holding you hostage. If they're saying that you can't get your tax cut unless they get theirs.
Right.
So first thing we got to do is unlink the corporate tax code and the personal income tax. Mm-hmm. And that comes, again, with getting new leadership in across all levels of government, from governors on down to our mayors, that can send corporations and look them in the eye and say, you're not getting a tax cut. We're right. not cutting your taxes. We're cutting people's taxes, as we should be doing.
Right.
We're not cutting your taxes.
So what can everyday Georgians do to support climate action and push for stronger environmental policies?
Well, I think one big environmental policy that's big right now in the state is the Okefenokee Protection Act.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have not called your legislator and asked them, are they supporting that bill, you should right now. That's the easiest thing that we can do right now. Because
yeah.
that's one big bill. It's protecting, but protect of course, a smaller natural resource, but it's a big bill that's going to protect.
Right.
That's one of the only bills we have right now to protect the natural resources in
mm-hmm.
Georgia.
Yeah.
And so, key thing is call your representative right now. It's go to legis.ga.gov, find your representative, and call them up and say, are you supporting the Okefenokee Protection Act? Email them. I've supported it because that's, again, one of the only bills we have right now that's going to deal with natural resource protection. And then after you do that, stay in their face about several issues. Remind them that you're a constituent and that you care about these issues, because there was, you know, I've seen it before. You know, you might think that some might be very, very rigid, but they're not. They love to hear from constituents. And if you tell them, like, hey, I'm a constituent and I want you to vote for this issue, pressure works. You know, bullying works a little bit. You know, you gotta harass some folks sometimes. I need you to vote for this, especially now when you have a lot of folks that on the majority party side that are scared for the election next year because they know that federally it's some messed up stuff to keep it PG.
Yeah.
Keep some federally it's gonna keep this messed up stuff. So they're scared about their own re-elections. So, you know, hold them accountable. And go call them up and say, I'm your constituent, and I need you to vote for this, or we're voting you out. They respond to pressure. They respond a little bit strong on me. But you just got to – it's uncomfortable, but leading the way is uncomfortable.
leading the way is uncomfortable. Absolutely. As you look ahead, mm-hmm. what are, because we're now at Legislative Day 26, so we're almost
26
is, yeah. So we're almost done. 40-day session, almost like all the way, almost all the way through.
Oh, thank God.
And then you'll have another cycle next year, and that'll be the end of the full session where bills can, you know, keep moving till next year.
Mm-hmm.
What are your top legislative priorities over, like, from this year to next? And then how, and then tagging onto that, how can people in your district stay engaged and support your work? So that's a twofold question.
Okay. Well, my top legislative priorities were not changed, you know, education, public safety, housing.
Right.
A bill that I'm very excited about right now, two bills I'm very excited about right now, I'm about to drop. Three bills, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah,
they keep popping my head. But three bills I'm very excited about right now. The first, the Hunger Free Campus Act. Right now, UGA, they have a program, a need-based program for students to be able to purchase food. And you don't think about food insecurity in terms of college students.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember when I was at Morehouse, the CAF closed at 7. And I had a class that ended at 8. So you had to ask, how am I going to eat food? And at the time, when I was at Morehouse, it was maybe sound old, that Walmart was closed.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't walk to Walmart. I wasn't a big fan of BTJ. I still am not. I hope they're not watching this, but I'm not a big fan of BTJ. And then Chick-fil-A, again, Chick-fil-A, if you're watching, I'm sorry, but it's overdone in Georgia. It is overdone.
We love.
So I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri, where we only have like 4 Chick-fil-A's, and so Chick-fil-A
it's a novelty.
But here it's novelty.
On every corner.
Here's on every corner. I just got sick and tired of Chick-fil-A after like by October my freshman year. I was like, dang, is there something else other than Chick-fil-A?
Zaxby's.
Ugh. Okay. Worse. Sorry, Zaxby's. Hope you're not watching this.
You won't get a sponsorship.
I won't get a sponsorship from Chick-fil-A or Zaxby's.
Well,
and
no,
you know what? I love Chick-fil-A. I'm a huge Chick-fil-A.
It got tired. I get it.
I can't do it. So, but in all seriousness, like, but you know, your options start getting few as a college student.
Right.
And especially as a college student, you're broke. You can't afford food anyway.
Yeah.
So, my bill would take that UGA program and make it statewide because we shouldn't only be having just subsidizing UGA. We should give it to every single student. Second bill I have is about AI and housing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you would never think that there are AI developers right now, there's AI developers and landlords. And in Atlanta, they've been indiscriminately raising rents for the past few months.
Right.
And so what my bill would aims to do, it says that it bans practices of discrimination. It doesn't, and it also mandates a human verification. It doesn't get rid of the process all together. You know, because we got to support the free market, of course, the open market. But it bans discrimination and also mandates human verification. So because what a lot of people are doing right now with these devices, they're not saying don't accept a black person's application, but they would say don't accept the application from this zip code. Don't accept the application with an apostrophe in the name. So there are different ways that you can do to say black without being getting rid of that discrimination practice and mandating human verification. And then the last bill I'm excited for is a bill that would equalize the HOPE scholarship for HBCUs. Right now, HBCUs going to take about $1,500 of the HOPE scholarship, especially at our private HBCUs.
Yeah.
But it's much higher at a private white institution.
Mm.
And so the HOPE Equalization Grant equalizes it for all.
So that was awesome. That's all I have for today. I wanted to thank you so much for coming on our podcast and, you know, talking with me today.
Thank you.
I hope you had a good time. I know we couldn't get you last time. You're a teacher, so you had class. And,
I did. Yes.
So, thank you so much for joining us today.